Helen Duffenthalberg for BizNews, and I have Sarah Collins, the founder of Wonderbag, in the BizNews studio. It was established in 2008 and developed as a solution to South Africa's energy crisis, providing families with the means to continue cooking daily meals even during power outages. But an interesting aspect of Wonderbag's business model is its innovative use of carbon credits for funding. And today, Sarah Collins is here in the studio with us to share more about Wonderbag and its pioneering carbon offset program. Hi, Sarah. Welcome to BizNews.
Hi, Linda. Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be with you.
So, Sarah, what exactly is Wonderbag?
So, Wonderbag is actually a non-electric portable cooker. So it's actually it's based on an ancient technology of heat retention cooking. So just to give everybody sort of a visual of it, it looks like a giant colorful pumpkin, really. And how it works is you bring your food to the boil on a fire or a stove. And then once it's at boiling temperature, you take the pot with its lid off and you put it into the Wonderbag, and it continues to cook for 8 to 12 hours. And it's been around for many, many centuries. A lot of people know heat retention cooking. And in the early 70s, there was the Hay Box with Bridget Oppenheimer, and the Wonder Box, should I say, with Bridget Oppenheimer and Woman for Peace. And so that's how I remembered my grandmother used to have a box with cushions in it. And she used to, in the kitchen on the farm, bring food to the boil and then put long cooking things into the box. And us children were not allowed to open or touch that box. And so when I was exploring alternative energy sources, that memory came and I thought, why can't we bring heat retention cooking into the 21st century? So that's exactly what I've done.
And who makes these Wonderbags?
So Wonderbag is based on a sort of entrepreneurial development model. So we have our own factory in Tongaat, which we've had for 15 years. But we utilize entrepreneurs to manufacture our Wonderbags. So we look at communities, women organizations who, you know, have sewing machines, can sew, and then we outsource our manufacturing so that they are able to scale their businesses within the family of Wonderbag. And it's a model that really is exciting because it takes people into their own businesses. It takes them out of poverty, not just giving them a job, and then they create opportunities for other people. So, and we've done that across the world in all our manufacturing.
How many entrepreneurs are involved?
Sure. You know, we've been around for 16 years. Yesterday was our 16th birthday, and it was, so over the years, sure, there's been many, many, but we have actively 20,000 entrepreneurs that are working with us in different countries. And we've got over 10 million Wonderbags in homes.
How many of them are South African?
Meaning how many Wonderbags are in South Africa?
No, entrepreneurs. And how many come from South Africa? Yeah.
Well, we've got about 2,000 in South Africa right now.
This model of yours to fund Wonderbag through carbon credits, how does that work and how did you come up with that idea?
Well, I think, Linda, that's the basis of the development work that I've been doing for three decades, is looking at how do we fund innovative projects that are changing people's lives in the most vulnerable areas and the most vulnerable communities across the world. And you know, one can say NGOs or philanthropic money or corporate social investment, but that is transient money. And so I wanted to look at a mechanism, a financial tradable mechanism that could be the commercial element to funding Wonder Bags to people who need them the most. And that's the mission of Wonder Bag, is to get Wonder Bags to people at a price they can afford. So I don't believe that anything should be free. But I don't believe if you take a Wonder Bag to somebody and say it's 550 Rand and they can't afford that, that is really not the right thing to do. So I was looking at how do I find something that can subsidize it down to a price that a person can afford. So when I was exploring that space, carbon credits came up and green financing. And basically, 40 years ago, the concept of supporting the people most affected by climate change, they needed to be compensated in some way by the largest polluters in the world and to give them innovations that would be culturally relevant to support their growth, economic stimulation and growth and success through the disasters that we are seeing of climate change right now, like droughts, floods, etc. So that's how carbon credits were initially envisaged, was to support people most affected by climate change and energy resources. And so that is what attracted me to it. And to get a carbon credit, you have to prove additionality. So what that means is that you have to prove that the people that are getting the Wonder Bag at a subsidized price would not otherwise be able to afford a Wonder Bag. And so we launched our first carbon projects in 2010 in Rwanda and in least developed countries, and in 2012 in South Africa. And then the markets actually took a big dive. So in those years, it was a very viable. It was the right thing to do from a financing perspective. But unfortunately, 2012 saw the whole carbon markets collapse. But what's really significant, I think, for BizNews and for me to share with the South African audience is that the South African government took a really bold, progressive step in terms of climate mitigation and climate financing, because they brought in a carbon tax and they legislated, which meant that South Africa became a compliance market. And that meant that we have a base price so that we are able to trade carbon with a floor price. And I really want to really emphasize the leadership of South Africa in terms of this globally. And that's why many countries in Africa are really struggling with carbon projects, because there isn't legislation and therefore there isn't a floor price, which makes it a very high risk. So my project in South Africa, Recipe for Change, was launched as a compliance project. And how it works, just so that people can visualize what is a carbon credit. I mean, that's the thing, is like most people don't understand it, and I get that. So if you to visualize somebody cooking sampan beans, for example, and they have a big pile of firewood, and the pot is boiling, and you keep putting firewood underneath that pot, so it continues to boil for 6 hours. Now what you do is you bring it to the boil for 20 minutes. You put it into the Wonder Bag, you close the Wonder Bag, and you put the fire out. We then calculate the savings of that wood or the electricity or the paraffin, and that gets then measured. And becomes, so you measure how many emissions were not emitted, and that's where you get the ton of saved CO2. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And it's a very highly regulated market, so you are audited every year, and you have to get certification. There are a number of certification bodies. We are registered with VERA, which is based out of Washington. And there are barriers right now in terms of issuing of carbon credits, and one of them has been a lot of scrutiny and a lot of methodology questioning, which has slowed down the markets a bit. But we believe these are teething problems. We actually support this because we believe that true transparency is going to give us higher, valuable credits that people can actually go. So you can go and see how we save carbon credits in the field. You can go and see how we calculated it. We have a very sophisticated data capturing system. So we're a very community-based monitoring on the ground, but we have software backing that up in terms of, so we are very much a data-driven business, which people don't think because they see this old-fashioned wonder bag and think, well, that's prehistoric. And yet it is changing the way people cook across Africa. And I think it's really important that people understand that if we can work with governments to persuade them to legislate like South Africa has done, and they have a really robust and an amazing vision in terms of how they've done this and the support that they're giving to carbon projects that are developing in South Africa. So I've been around for a long time. We've been a carbon credit business for, sure, 12, 14 years now. But we're at a very critical and exciting time. I think one of the challenges that we have in South Africa is getting the purchasing and the funding from our own South African banks and getting people to understand how does this get through credit? You know, how does this make sense? So I think that there is, and we're working with the banks to look at how do we innovate funding. And I think in this world we're living in right now, innovation, not just in projects like mine, which are changing the way people cook, but innovation in the funding space. You know, how do we use carbon credits? How do we use ESG? How do we use the valuation and monitoring of the sustainable development goals that we are achieving through Wonderbag? How do we then pass those over to the funders so that they can report with transparency of investment into projects? So this is a kind of work that I'm really excited about, and was as one of the sort of certainly the only woman project developer in the world, but also because I've been around a long time, I understand the loopholes, I understand the difficulties, the challenges, I understand all of those things. And it's not straightforward, but I think it's a very, very critical way for us to equalize the status quo in the climate space between the people most affected and the people who are the biggest emitters.
So who are your customers for the carbon credits? I don't mean to the wonder bags.
So, So we work with companies like Nando's, Anglo American, EDF. So most of ours are offshore, out of South Africa, our buyers. Sasol's a big buyer of ours. We work very closely with Sasol, and they have an amazing appetite and are really, even though they are the biggest emitters, they also are very forward-thinking. And I applaud Sasol for the way that they are taking this and taking people like Wonderbag and myself and saying, how can we walk this journey with you? So I think there's some really great stuff happening in South Africa. I certainly am extremely excited about Recipe for Change as a leader, as a pioneer in the carbon credit business. And I'm excited by our partners, the people who are working with us, because it is early days and it's not all, it's not easy. That's, I will tell you, it sounds wonderful and glamorous. It's not, you know, there's lots of stumbling blocks, but that's okay because it means that the robustness of the carbon markets, as well as the transparency, as well as the integrity and also the crediting, you know, not to overclaim credits, to ensure that credits are properly issued for the right amount per Wonder Bag or per cook stove or per whatever. And so I think it's very important. I'm very fortunate to have a business called Promethium Carbon, who've been around for 20 years. Robbie Lowe is the founder of that, and they are my carbon partners in terms of the consultants and the work, the technical work, and they are absolutely leaders in the field globally. And so to have them with me on this journey is golden.
Anything else you want to add?
No, I think that you know, the carbon markets are really something that we need to understand more about. And I think that as this transition goes forward and there are bumps in the road, I think we need platforms like what you're giving me to speak about this and to actually show the positive impact. Because what people don't see is the 500,000 women whose lives have been changed by the Wonder Bag from subsidized carbon funding. So, you know, once you can visualize Gogo Dlamini in a hat, whose life has changed, the girls are now in school, she only has to have a fire for 20 minutes a day. Then you realize that your biggest emitters are connecting directly to the people who are most affected. And so it equalizes humanity, you know. And I think it's really important that we don't just look at one aspect of this. We actually look at the whole circular economy around this and the impacts, you know, the impacts that it's having. So it's a complex business model. It's not something that's straightforward. People often just roll their eyes at me but I think it's something that young people are incredibly curious about. They count their carbon footprints. They look at what they're doing, especially in Europe. And so I think that it has to be a global movement. And even though there's many other crises going on in the world, and we've got elections coming up and there are other priorities, we have to keep our focus on climate change, because our resources are scarce in this world. And so I really believe that this needs to take the forefront that this government has put it at. And I think that that needs to happen globally.
Sarah Collins, thanks so much for speaking to me.
Thank you, Linda.